Our guest this hour will help us discover and understand our ancestors. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, September 23rd. Are you interested in genealogy? Have you ever wanted to trace your family tree? Have you? Why do so many of us want to research our family history, and what are some of the best ways to go about this? We'll welcome your questions and your experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is coming to Wisconsin this coming Saturday to Janesville to speak at the Wisconsin State Genealogical Society's Fall Seminar. She's a professional genealogist and the author of The Journey Takers. Leslie Albrecht Huber joins us. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you received a lot of accolades for your book, which came out a few years ago. Who were the Journey Takers?
Well, in my book, The Journey Takers is a term I used to refer to immigrant ancestors. And what I wanted to do with that is use the story of my own family, my own journey takers, to tell the wider story of the immigrant experience, which so many Americans have that as part of their family story.
Right, and you really give a lot of credit to the European immigrants. That pretty brave people, weren't they?
They were. I think that a lot of times we think of them as ordinary. They were the peasants, the ones who came here, and yet really what they did was an extraordinary act of bravery, of courage, to leave everything behind and come here and really play a big role in shaping our country and our own lives.
So why did you want to research your family history, your genealogy?
Well, you know, I actually got interested in this when I was 16 years old, which is a little bit unusual because a lot of people in the genealogy world think of it as something that many people start as they're nearing retirement age. But, of course, people start genealogy at all ages. And as a 16-year-old, I talked with my great-grandmother one time. She was about 90 years old, and she told me stories about how she used to dance in roller skates and how she eloped with my great-grandfather when she was 15 and lied about her age to get married. And I just began to really see her as a person with a full story, instead of just as through a 16-year-old's mind as, you know, an old lady who liked to quilt and read Reader's Digest.
Right.
And I became curious about her life, and through that began to learn about my ancestors and my family.
How did you get started?
So I really started studying this as a college student. So I went to Brigham Young University, which is one of the only places that offers that as a course of study. And I remember sitting in my freshman class, they had a freshman family history class, and just being on the edge of my seat, I thought it was so exciting. And I'd look around, and some of the people next to me would have fallen asleep on their desk. But I thought it was fascinating. So I continued to study there. I had a degree in history with an emphasis in German family history. And when I was finished, I worked for a company in Salt Lake City, taking clients for German genealogy, and eventually branched out into writing for magazines and speaking.
And you got your master's at UW-Madison.
I did. We moved here for graduate school, and my master's is in public affairs. We moved away, and then just this past August of 2012, we moved back. So I live in Middleton now.
I didn't know that. Okay, well, that's good to know. And you'll be speaking at the Wisconsin State Genealogical Society's Fall Seminar in Janesville on Saturday. What are you going to be talking about?
So their theme is really understanding and researching your genealogy. So I'm going to be talking about some basic genealogy principles, such as getting organized, and there's a lecture on immigration research. And then one of my favorite topics we'll be talking about is beyond names and dates, and really how to make your ancestors not just be those lists of facts, but how to turn them into real people with real stories, how to use the sources to do that.
Well, this is sounds fascinating. It really does. I think a lot of us are interested in doing this. Why do you suppose it is such a popular hobby?
Well, you know, it is very popular. It's one of the fastest growing hobbies in America, one of the largest hobbies in America. And I think that For one thing, we're a society that really places emphasis on family, really believes that family is important. And I also think as our society, things are changing faster and faster all the time, and people are becoming more transient. And as this happens, I think a lot of people are really searching for that sense of connection and that sense of grounding that understanding our families and our past can give us.
Yeah. Well, how does it give us a sense of connection or a sense of grounding?
For one thing, I think as we learn about our family, we come to understand ourselves better and where we came from. I know as I learned about my own grandparents and their roots, there are little things about my parents that suddenly made sense to me, why they did some of the things they did, or why I could see my parents had a very strong work ethic, and I came to see how that had come when their ancestors had settled in this desert community and had to really make their lives from nothing there, and that was something that became part of their identity that they passed down through the generations. So I think we start to recognize that in our roots, and, you know, it's a fine line because we are, of course, made up of our past, but we also don't have to let our past define us, and so we can see where we came from, take the good of that we want, and build on that for our own lives.
We are talking with Leslie Huber. She is a genealogy freelance writer and speaker. She will be giving 4 lectures at the 2013 Fall Seminar at the Wisconsin State Genealogical Society's Fall Seminar on September 28th. And we're welcoming your questions for her. Have you searched your family roots? How did you go about it? Are you someone who wants to get started? Do you need any advice? Have you run into any roadblocks? Maybe our guest can help. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about researching our family history, and our guest is here to provide some information and advice on how we can take this journey, and we welcome your questions for her. We welcome your discoveries. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, and you can answer this question for us. Why did you decide to research your genealogy? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Leslie Huber. She's a genealogy freelance writer and speaker, and she will be speaking at the Wisconsin State Genealogical Society's Fall Seminar on Saturday in Janesville. There's more information on that seminar, by the way, posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Don in Manawa is our first caller. Hi, Don.
Good morning.
Morning.
Well, I was kind of interested in genealogy. I just wanted to find out about my family. They're originally from Germany and Norway. And I had done a lot of research on one of the most common websites. I thought I pretty much had my family tree done, so I typed in my name. And there was a name popped up right below it that was spelled just like mine with an A on it. My name's Don with 2 N's. Hers was Donna. So I typed it. I said, let's see who she is. She's from Minneapolis also. Turns out that was my sister that I never knew about.
Oh, my.
58 years old. And my father never told me about it. My mother never told me about it. And it was from a previous marriage. So I called. I did some more research, found out her family was, and called her oldest brother, actually a younger brother. She's the oldest. And we got connected, and we've been in touch. Great thing about it, she lives in Florida, and when it gets cold up here, I get to go see her.
Good deal.
it was quite an amazing change because I'm an only child, and
now you have a sister and a brother. Wow! And so, do you know Don? Were your parents still alive when you made this discovery?
No, and that's one of my things. I always wondered why he didn't tell me about it. And my mother tried to give me a hint one time. I said, how come you gave me 2 N's in my name? And she said, well, I would name you after your sister. And I thought she was joking. you know, I was just a young man at the time. I didn't know. But it's been quite an experience, and followed my family all the way back to the 1600s in Norway, and my dad's family back into early Germany, but I could never find anything more about him because he must have been an illegal immigrant. He wasn't on any shipping manifest or anything.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I guess you can find out all sorts of things, Leslie, if you research the family history.
I think one of the amazing things about family histories is it doesn't only build connections with the past, but it's an amazing tool in building connections within our families now. As our caller was saying, I've heard so many stories of people finding family that they didn't know about or reconnecting with branches of the family that they hadn't had contact with for years and years, cousins, et cetera, that are drawn together because of what they have in common.
Don, thank you for sharing that story. Pretty fascinating. And, you know, I don't mean to, I don't know. I mean, this is all wonderful that he discovered that he has a sister and a brother. But I suppose you can make some sad or disturbing discoveries too, Leslie?
Oh, definitely. I know that in my own family, my father-in-law recently found out that his grandfather, who he knew well, was a bigamist. He had another family around the corner there in New York City that none of them ever knew about. And they stumbled on this doing family history. And yes, it was something that was disturbing. So as we go looking for our families, we have to remember that our families were not perfect. We're going to find a wide variety, just like we find a wide variety of people now, we're going to find a wide variety of people on our family trees. And when I have people ask me about this a lot, actually, at conferences, and I think there's kind of two approaches to this. If they're people far in the past that we didn't know, I tell people just to have a healthy sense of humor about that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if your ancestor was a cattle thief, then that's just a fun story to tell your children. It's, of course, a lot different when it's someone that you knew and you have an emotional connection with. And then sometimes that is something that people have to work through and use discretion in talking to other family members about it, but hopefully use it as a tool to bring family closer together still now.
Right. And just because Don couldn't find his a grandfather's name, I'm not sure who came over to this country, but couldn't find it on a shipping manifest, does that mean there was any, it was illegal?
Not necessarily. Mm. I mean, I'd have to look more at his information, but so not to disparage his own particular situation, but it is one of the common myths of genealogy that, you know, my ancestor was a stowaway or my ancestor snuck aboard the ship, and this almost never happened. Not nearly as much as the family story seemed to imply. So there can be a number of reasons we don't find them on a ship manifest. We simply might not be looking in the right place. There are, of course, lots of ports they could have come into, lots of places they could have left from. Often it has to do with the fact that maybe they actually are there, but we don't recognize them because of spelling variants in the names. You know, our ancestors were coming from different countries, saying their names to someone who spoke a different language. They could have written it down in a different way, spelling it phonetically, not in a way that we would recognize if we weren't really careful with our search. So there are lots of reasons why we might not recognize them even when they are actually in the record.
Right. There's an Ellis Island website that you can go online, and I did this not so long ago. Another family member had discovered this and discovered when my grandfather and his wife and their first two children, which included my father, came over on a boat from Italy in the early 1900s. And the name, though, my grandfather's name was Primo, P-R-I-M-O, and it was spelled Bruno on this website. So they had, you know, somewhere along the line it got misspelled.
Right, and that is so common. Ellis Island, their database has 22 million names. And so just typing in a computer search and hoping that it's going to find your one ancestor, sometimes it takes some tweaking and playing around, because sometimes that might even simply be, it could be a phonetic error, it could be an indexing error, too. Mm-hmm. If someone misread the handwriting.
Let's go to Mark in Mineral Point now. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, good morning. I wanted to find out what some of the best websites are for this. And in particular, I was hoping to find maybe one or two places where you could go and not have to pay much or maybe not have to pay anything. And I guess I was wondering how the Ellis Island site fits into the broader set of sites that are out there.
So to answer your second question first, the Ellis Island site covers arrivals from 1892 until 1924. Theoretically, everyone who arrived through Ellis Island. It's a fabulous site. It's a very specific site, though, so it only applies to you if your ancestors came in that time period. There are lots of other immigration sites. There's a Castle Garden one if your ancestors came to New York earlier. And there are other places to look if they came to Boston or Philadelphia or New Orleans, or if they left from certain points. So it's a wonderful, fabulous source, but it does cover a very particular record. If you're looking for one overall, overarching free site, then my hands-down recommendation is Family Search. So that's just www.familysearch.org. It's free to use. And a lot of people get on there and search for their ancestor's name, but that is only scratching the surface of what Family Search has. If you take some time to explore, click on their search tab and then click on their wiki tab. And they have a wonderful breadth of information there available about all sorts of topics, and it's a great place for anyone to get started. So if you want to look for your German ancestor, you can read about Germany and how to find ancestors from there, what kind of sources there are and how to get them. Or if you want to research ancestors in Wisconsin, they have a Wisconsin page, and on and on and on. And they also have lots of links to original records, many that are free. So I would encourage, they also have seminars online, webinars that you can listen to by genealogy speakers, watch their slides. They just have an amazing amount of information, so I'd encourage people to start there.
All right, Mark.
Okay, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks very much. And that was familysearch.com or .org?
.org.
.org. Familysearch.org. Maybe we can put a link to that website on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page as well. Cody in Luxembourg is with us. Hi, Cody.
Hi.
And I don't know, Cody, if I think we did speak before. My grandfather is from another grandfather. My maternal grandfather is from Luxembourg, the country in Europe.
Oh, actually, we haven't.
Oh, okay.
I was in middle school, and we had a project to make your own family food dish. And doing the research on it, you had to have some sort of research. I found my family's crest in an old file in my great grandmother's closet. An actual picture of it, and we had it remade for her on her 80th birthday 10 years ago.
Oh,
and it was just kind of interesting.
What was interesting about the family crest?
Well, if you look more into it in the file she had, it actually represented our family back then, which was either a farmer or an assistant to the mayor of whatever town at the time.
Yeah.
And that's what it interested me about it.
Right. So did you found the crest, but did you also look into the family history at all?
Yeah, I did. And actually, one of her great-grandparents, I believe it was like a farmer on the side and also helped one of the mayors.
Which was a very common thing. So many of our ancestors were farmers or agricultural laborers because that was kind of obviously the main occupation then, but many of them did have a craft on the side. I have an ancestor who was a farmer and a carpenter. So and it's so interesting to learn those details about them, that piece of their identity.
Yeah, what was it about Wisconsin that so many German immigrants came here, Leslie?
Well, you know, in fact, Wisconsin, there are more people in Wisconsin with German ancestry than there is any other state with any other ancestry. So that's how German
Wow.
we really are here. And I think a number of factors came into play, but one of those is that most of the people leaving Germany were small farmers. They weren't the very poorest of the poor after the indentured servant system was closed down. So they were small farmers, and they were looking for a place to farm. They were looking for more land available. That was the main draw of America, and Wisconsin was a great place to come for that, the Midwest in general. So they were looking for good farmland. And then, of course, you would have the effect that once people started settling here, they'd write back and say, hey, we're living in this great place, great for farming, why don't you come too? And so you would have that chain migration effect where Germans came where Germans already were.
Interesting. So besides Germans, is there, and we have just a minute before news, is there another group of immigrants that called Wisconsin home?
Being new to Wisconsin, I don't know that I can mm-hmm. speak to Wisconsin specifically, but the second major group that came in general to the U.S. in the mid to late 1800s were the Irish. And many of them started as the potato famine immigrants, of course, escaping what was there in Ireland, coming here. There's also, of course, a lot of Scandinavians throughout that period.
And a lot of Scandinavians in this area as well. We are talking about genealogy and talking about how we can study and research our family history and trace our family trees. And we're wondering if you've done this. How did you go about it? What did you find? Why did you search your genealogy? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest, Leslie Huber, is a genealogy expert, and she has lots of information and advice. If you have a question or an experience you'd like to share, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about researching and discovering our family history this hour, and our guest expert is here to help us learn how to get started, how to get around any roadblocks, and how to apply what we learn. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Monday, September 23rd. If you have a question or a story you'd like to share, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Leslie Albrecht Huber, a freelance genealogical writer and speaker. She is the author of The Journey Takers. She will be giving four lectures at the 2013 Fall Seminar at the Wisconsin State Genealogical Society on September 28th in Janesville. More information on that fall seminar is posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let's go back to the phones. It's Vern in Seymour is with us next. Hello, Vern.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a real quick little story about the first caller said that he thought maybe his ancestors were illegal. I think his great-great-grandmother, my father told me that the original spelling for our last name is Helm, H-E-L-M, and she did not want anyone to know that we were related to the Prussians. And so she added an S to the end of our last name. So if I want to look at back before they got to the United States, I'd have to spell the last name different.
Oh, so she changed the spelling of your last name so she wouldn't be associated with the Prussians.
Yeah, she did that herself.
Interesting. Wow, what about that, Leslie? So that would be difficult unless someone told you that.
Sure, that definitely puts an extra bump in your research there when the names are different. But unfortunately, it's quite common. Sometimes they did it on purpose, as in this case, which, you know, is even more frustrating when you're on this side of it trying mm-hmm. to find it. But it also happened on accident a lot of times. Certainly during the World Wars, it wasn't so cool to be German at that time, and so people would tweak the spellings of their names, Schmidt to Smith, things like this, so that they didn't sound as mm-hmm. German, so they weren't identified that way. But again, also just through time, names would change and be spelled differently. And so it's very important that we have that open mind as we go back trying to find those names.
So give us maybe the tracing your family tree 101 here. If we have not done this before, how should we get started?
Well, I always tell people to start with yourself. And that surprises people because we want to dive in. You know, we heard about this ancestor in 1803 and we're going to trace them. But the problem is a lot of times we're not even really related to that ancestor, at least not in the way we think. So it's important that we start with the present. That's how genealogy works, going mm-hmm. from the present to the past, step by step. and, you know, choose one line that we're going to focus on as we extend those family lines back. And I also tell people that when you're getting started, start with what you know and start with your family now. So, again, before we start to dig in the records, we need to call our cousins and our grandmothers, our parents, and we'll be surprised what these people might already know, the information that they might have. So gather up what we already have. And then the other bit of caution that I like to tell people is, you know, genealogy research now is very different than it was 15 years ago because of the Internet. There is so much information at our fingertips. Now, is that information all correct, though? Absolutely not. And so the Internet has been a wonderful, fabulous thing for genealogy, making it so much more accessible to people with all range of skills and backgrounds. But we have to remember that anything that we find online, anyone can put anything online, right? We know that.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow people forget this when they do genealogy research. If my family tree's online, that's it. There it is.
Is there something that you need to do to verify that information online?
Certainly. Mm-hmm. You definitely do, because it's only as accurate as the person's research who put it up there. So sometimes it's very good, and sometimes it's really not very good at all. And so the key is original records. You know, again, talking to family members who know things, and then finding those passenger lists, finding those census records, those marriage records, those church records that can confirm what we see online. Now, having it online can help us, because then we are targeted to know exactly where we want to look. But we do need to take that next step and find those records that show that. Or hopefully, maybe even online, the people have already done that and put that information online so we can see where they got it from. But you never want to take a family tree you find online and accept it as truth.
Mm-hmm. Jerry on Facebook writes, sometimes the research is like a treasure hunt. The Mormon roots of my father's side are very deep and spread fast, considering I have Mormon ancestors who had several wives and sometimes over 30 children with each wife. Oh, my goodness. I have a photo with one such family sitting outside in the summer having dinner at a very long table. So interesting. And you mentioned, Leslie, that you went to school at Brigham Young, and that's one of the, I mean, why is family history such a big deal at Brigham Young University and is in the Mormon Church?
So I am Mormon, of course, mm-hmm. being that I went to BYU. And again, I think that it's that emphasis on family that this church really teaches and believes, that family is central to everything that we are and that we do. And so they have made it a big part of the church to collect these records and make them available to everyone. And so the Family History Library in Salt Lake City, run by the LDS Church, is the largest genealogical repository in the world. And Family Search, the site I mentioned before, which I think any professional genealogist would tell you is the best free online source out there, is also supported by the LDS Church. So, and certainly some, as this writer was mentioning, some groups are more well-documented than others, and people with LDS roots tend to have a little head start because this was an emphasis put for so many years that there are a better effort made at finding and organizing these records.
I know a lot of people who use Ancestry.com. Is that another good site, or they do charge to use that site?
Right. Ancestry is a wonderful site. It is a fee charging subscription website. Although a lot of public libraries do have subscriptions, so sometimes people can get around that by going to their public library and using it there until they decide if this is something that they'll be using enough to justify the expense of having it themselves. But they have a large collection of, for example, passenger arrival lists, probably the most solid collection there is out there. They have census records, all sorts of records, voter registration records, city directories, all kinds of things. And it really depends on what time period and what place you're researching as to how much it will help you. But certainly it is a website that people starting will want to check out.
So when we are getting started, are there common roadblocks or obstacles that will, delay our journey?
Yes. I think the biggest one we have already mentioned, and that is the names. That, in fact, there is a famous saying in genealogy that a lot of families are never found. When people look in, I can't quote the saying exactly, but people look in records that have their family there but don't recognize them simply because of the misspelling of their name. So that is a major roadblock. A lot of times people find the step of immigration to be a roadblock. They're able to find their ancestors here, but most of us have immigrant ancestors. At one point or another, we're going to face this hurdle. And so tracing them across the ocean can be tricky. And I tell people the one piece of advice I have for that is what you need to find is the name of the old world town where your family came from. So you look in all the records on this side of the ocean first, see if you can find that town name. And once you find that, most times people can be successful at that point because they can dig into parish records, which are the most important European record.
We are talking about tracing our family tree, discovering our family history, and we're welcoming your questions for our guest expert at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So how much do you know about your family history? Have you researched your genealogy? Let us know what you discovered. Let us know if you found something particularly helpful or if you maybe have some sort of roadblock that you're trying to overcome. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Leslie Huber. She is a freelance genealogy writer and speaker. She'll be speaking at the fall seminar at the Wisconsin State Genealogical Society on September the 28th, this coming Saturday in Janesville. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 12 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Monday, September 23rd. We are talking about genealogy during this hour and welcoming your questions and your stories for our guest, who is a genealogy expert, Leslie Albrecht Huber. Eugene in Viola is with us now. Hi, Eugene.
Good morning, Joy. Can I give my last name?
Sure.
On the air? I was born Eugene O'Toole. I didn't do the genealogy, but I did trace the name back. I traced the name back to 1215 to St. Lawrence O'Toole of Ireland. And originally the name meant Atu, which meant of the land, and I also found a coat of arms. And then, out of curiosity, since I was on those reservations for a number of years, I looked up Custer's enrollment. And there was an O'Toole that was in Custer's 7th Cavalry. But when they took off the Little Bighorn, he went to the infirmary.
Oh,
he didn't make the trip. I thought that was funny.
Well, good for him, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, but it was just plain interesting. Now I know there's a gentleman living here in town, and I told him his last name sounded like it was Irish. He said yes. He said his grandfather dropped the O, and I think some of the Irish did that. They dropped the O, or they didn't want to be associated with Ireland.
Really? Well, Eugene, thank you very much for sharing that. So did you hear about that, Leslie, that the Irish would drop the O?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily that specifically, but that definitely names became Americanized as
right.
people came to this country. And sometimes it was because they didn't want to be associated with that culture, but sometimes it just was easier as time went on. You know, you think of some of the Eastern European people, they got tired of people misspelling their names all the time, mispronouncing their names, and so they simplified them to make it easier for people here.
Yeah, my dad's name was Gerardo when he came over on the boat from Italy. His older brother was Giuseppe, Joseph, and that was their names in America. Did the family do that, or did Ellis Island do that?
Well, again, that's one of those mm-hmm. genealogy myths that Ellis Island changed the names. Sometimes it might have been that the family did it. There was no large-scale name-changing effort that took place, although a lot of people believe that, at mm-hmm. Ellis Island. Now, certainly names were written down, quote, incorrectly at Ellis Island because, again, maybe your father or grandfather said his name, and, you know, he's mm-hmm. Italian, and the person writing it down is just going to write it down based on what they hear. And so there could be a discrepancy there. The other thing to keep in mind is that throughout history, throughout the 1800s, our Western European ancestors wrote phonetically. So they weren't, you know, now we are so concerned about spelling someone's name right. We don't want to offend them by spelling their name wrong. And that is just a very modern way of thinking. Our ancestors, many of them were semi-literate, and they just didn't have the educational background that we do, and they weren't that concerned about it. And so when you're looking at old records, you'll find people's names spelled two different ways within one German record or within one Swedish record. You'll find the town name spelled more than one way within the same record. As long as it was pronounced basically the same, it worked. They just weren't that concerned. And so when you think of that mentality, you can see how when they would come here, how those variations would continue to occur in their names.
Let's go next to Heather in Somerset. Hello, Heather.
Good morning. How are you, ladies?
Very good. Are you researching your family tree?
I have been on and off. I'm a not very good member of the LDS Church, we'll put it that way, but that's been part of what I've enjoyed about being a member. And my mother is, my mother was born and raised in India, but she was British born and raised in India. And trying to find those records in India, I don't know how to go about doing that. I know her hometown. I found passenger logs with my grandmother when she was pregnant and traveling with five children because she refused to have another child while she was in India. And I found all those records, and those are, it's so exciting to actually see my grandmother and my aunts and my uncles listed on a passenger manifest. But trying to actually get records from India, how do I do that?
Well, that is a fun thing, isn't it, when you actually see their names on the record? Just hearing you say that, it just reminds me how exciting that is. And watching other people see their ancestors' names for the first time is so exciting. Now, as for finding records in India, I'm afraid I'm not going to be a lot of help on that. My background is in Western European research. I would refer you to Family Search and see if they have a wiki or any information on tracing ancestors in India specifically. That is a very specific subset. In fact, I don't even know anyone that specializes in that, but there should be someone, right, to help with that. So
yes.
I would check Family Search and see if they might have a wiki on tracing ancestors in that area.
Thank you very much, Heather, and good luck to you. And I know that earlier this summer there was actually a special conference for the genealogy of African Americans. I suppose that must be difficult for African Americans to trace their roots, given that the slavery issue was involved.
Yes, it can be very challenging, and the approach to records can be different. And this is true, you know, whatever place that you're researching. If you have Jewish ancestors, for example, you would take specific steps and use specific sources, as opposed to if you had Western European or Eastern European or African American. And so, in fact, professional genealogists themselves specialize in different areas because there is a big enough difference in the approach. So there'll be professional genealogists that exclusively work with helping people trace African American roots or helping people trace Jewish roots. And being familiar with that group of sources that is useful for people in that area.
Andy on Facebook says, I have an unusual last name, and I've always wondered about its origin. After an extensive online search, I was able to track down a distant relative in Luxembourg who was working on a genealogy site. I gave him some family history. He was able to find the immigration papers for my great-great-grandfather. I used his site to track my ancestry back into the 1500s. Wow, you can really go back, huh?
Well, and that is the beauty of the Internet, is that she was able to make that connection with that person in the first place, who she never would have been able to otherwise. And hopefully she's, or the person who put that online, is checking those sources back to the 1500s so that she knows that those are correct. But what an amazing thing to be able to connect with others far away. And I'd also say that anyone who has an unusual last name should consider themselves fortunate. People often bemoan that. But in fact, in the genealogy world, the worst thing you can do is have a last name like Smith or Harris. It's so difficult to identify the right person in the records. So having an unusual name is a great benefit in genealogy research, actually.
Yes. Brent in Menominee is with us. Hi, Brent.
Yes, good morning. Yeah, my comment is also
our family had changed her name in the 20s because of discrimination. So it's something I hadn't heard the comment on. It was an Irish name, Amara, and my grandfather changed the family name to Emery because there was real discrimination against the Irish at the time.
Certainly. I mean, discrimination has always and still does exist. And so when people were applying for a job, you know, they put down their name and people would know they were foreign. And so sometimes they got tired of that. And so to distance themselves from it, they would find a more American way to write their name so that it wasn't immediately apparent what their background was.
Yes, thank you very much. Let's, I guess we have time for one more call. Joyce in Elroy. Hi, Joyce.
Hi. I was just going to say that my mother and father's side of the family have both genealogy documents going back to the 1700s from Switzerland and Germany. And there is a book that we have called Ma and Pa and the 14 on the Move. And it's about my great-grandparents and their 14 kids. And the first chapter is about my great-grandparents, and the other 14 are about each of the kids. And it includes stories about my grandfather and my dad and his sisters and brothers. And we also have about four other books that other family members have written.
Well, I love that. And I'm sorry, we have just a minute to go, Joyce. Thank you for sharing that. You can write, you can actually write the book of your family history, Leslie, like you did, I suppose.
And I was going to say, what a great thing that she has that. And I hope that that's motivation to everyone listening, that when you find that information, it gets lost again unless you make sure that it survives. So putting it together in a book, sending it out on the internet, doing something to let people know what you found is extremely important.
Well, give us your talks again for the Wisconsin State Genealogical Society's fall seminar coming up.
So I'm starting with The Journey Takers, a talk based on my book, A Story of the Immigration Experience. Next, I'll be talking about Getting Organized, Take Control of Your Research Projects, followed by Beyond Names and Dates, Telling the Stories of Your Distant Ancestors, and finally, Crossing the Ocean with the Internet, so using online sources to take that immigration step.
This has been helpful and motivational. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Leslie Albrecht-Huber is a freelance genealogy writer and speaker. She is the author of The Journey Takers, and she will be talking at the fall seminar of the Wisconsin State Genealogical Society's fall seminar coming up this Saturday, September 28th. Thanks to Robin Cherry and to Christy Taylor for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.